online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Daryl Kristen. We are back for The Walking Dead Season 6. This time, First Time Again is the name of this episode. I have a very exciting panel today. John Carl is joining me today.
Hey, guys.
Joyce Azuri is joining me today. And our very special guest, you know him as Nicholas on Walking Dead, Michael Trenor is with us today.
Yes. Buzz, 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 after buzz, so glad you're here.
Super excited to have you.
Woo!
Very exciting episode.
Yes.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that were going on, and your character, you know, you kind of changed a little bit on this episode.
Yeah,
slightly.
I want to talk about nothing else besides Nicholas.
It's all about Nicholas on
Let's
this
do
episode.
It.
I hear there were a lot of commercial breaks, some other stuff with Rick Morgan, then Nicholas.
And then Nicholas. Yes, well, we start off at the top of the show with gunshots, and mm-hmm. we see the team with Rick kind of giving everyone a little bit of instructions for the show, or I mean, for the episode of what's going on. We have walkers outside of these, what seems to be like these semi-trucks that are laid out.
Yeah.
And it was a cool black and white effect that they were doing back and forth with the episode. It kind of reminded me very much of Sin City, even. Like, kind of gave me that a little bit feel.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
It does lend itself to like a noir vibe.
Very noir vibe. Yeah. It's like some Art Deco thing going on.
And it also helped that with all the little band-aids on it, Rick looked like Frank from Sin City.
He did look like Frank from Sin City. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the picture you showed us.
Yes.
Right. Well, we find out kind of later on in the episode that the reason, you know, they kind of show this at the beginning with the walkers outside of the trucks and are kind of maneuvering through the trucks is that the point is to get the swarm of zombies away from the camp, which is Alexandria. So we see that, we kind of find that out later on. But we also get reintroduced to Morgan, who's on the show, and we were excited about having that, you know, that scene come back on the show. What did you guys think with the way that Morgan was reintroduced?
I thought it was great. I liked that he started off being reintroduced on a good note. I mean, obviously him and Rick.
Sorry.
they have a long history. So,
yeah.
I mean, he kind of established the title of this episode, which is like, let's treat this as the first time again.
Yeah.
I also like throwing back to the season finale last season. There was a little bit of internal debate here of whether or not that they actually killed Pete. Yeah. And they showed right up front at the start. It's like, oh no, they took him out.
They took him out
in front of Morgan, which, you know, is pivotal to the whole you don't know me anymore story that's been happening between Rick and Morgan throughout the entire episode.
Yeah. And it was also Reg was part of that as well. Mm-hmm. And then we see with your character, Nicholas, we see a change with kind of with the reaction with Glenn. And we kind of see you guys bonding a little bit more, especially after you tried to kill the man, you know,
right
at the end of last season. But we see, you know, kind of a change with those characters. How is it working on the set this time and kind of like seeing the transformation of your character for this particular episode?
It was great working on set. That people weren't throwing things at me anymore.
Well, that's a good
which is really nice. You know, I was like, guys, it's just TV. They're like, we don't care, we hate you. And like all of season 5, I just like to chalk up to like a bad first date, you know. We all have those, you know, you shoot somebody
and you got your second chance.
And I got my second chance. I wouldn't go so far as to say they're bonding. I think the exciting thing about when you first see in one of the flashbacks the story, the continuation from season 5 of Glenn and Nicholas stumbling into the infirmary, where we see Tara's there, and you see the relief on Nicholas's face that, oh, I didn't kill Tara at least.
Yeah.
Or that disaster. I mean, it was Aiden who shot the grenade and killed Tara, almost. But Stephen and I were really conscious about deciding that we hadn't talked on the walk back from the woods. So when Nicholas hears Glenn say, it was a ricochet that got my shoulder.
Yeah.
That's a moment of like, oh my God, I really do have a chance to not just get exiled from Alexandria and to rebuild here. And so I think that's a really interesting thing, like the writer's choice and the way Stephen Beautiful played it, to have Glenn give Nicholas life a second time at the top of the season, you know? And so it's not really bonding. It's really just him Nicholas trying to find a way to make good on this second chance, third chance, fifth chance, 20th chance, you know, yeah, that he had.
And we didn't think that was actually even going to really happen. I didn't know if Nicholas really had that in him to make that change.
Yeah, a lot of people thought, like, you know, that I was still going to come after Glenn and try and kill him again. Yeah. Just the idea of, like, you know, you're still a threat to me. Your people are still a threat to Alexandria.
Yeah.
But, you know, after he peed himself and cried in the woods, I think, right, let's try
it. It was also great how it was a great correlation between what Maggie and Tara went through in the previous season, too.
Yeah,
true.
And they even talk about that in the episode.
Yep. Yeah.
You know,
it's a good parallel.
Yeah, it's like, I probably should have killed you after all the stuff that happened to my father, but we saw that it can change. And that's,
yeah,
and that's why Nicholas is getting the second shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
I feel like in the very least, Glenn is becoming a little more understanding of Nicholas. I mean, that's kind of what I get. I mean, I think it was Steve who said in an interview that, like, he didn't kill Nicholas because, or Glenn didn't kill Nicholas because he sort of saw himself.
Yeah, he has such compassion. And I know that because Steven has the capacity to play somebody with such heart, the writers write to that degree. And of course, like in the comic book, Glenn is this sort of this thumping a heartbeat for the group.
Mm-hmm.
But he really believes that and sees these people behind the walls of Alexandria, like these walls saved them but also kind of crippled them.
Yeah. Right.
Had he not been forced to be out there, he'd be just as lost as these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and what they've been out there dealing with, we've all, you know, been eating it up every Sunday night.
Yeah.
But it does forge a hardy warrior, whereas Alexandria is soft, yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
And then we also see the introduction of Heath, the new character,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
And we see you as Nicholas with Heath and Glenn, and you guys are trying to kind of figure out a way to distract the zombies away from the camp.
Right.
And that was pretty exciting to see as well. And, you know, it was cool to see a new character introduced as well, just for the show, and kind of watching the dynamic of you guys all interacting together. And as you were mentioning, kind of the change, the slight change that we see with Nicholas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
No. And again, I think that scene, I really liked it on the page, and I'm so happy that it came out well as well. You see so much about the history of Alexandria, because Nicholas has to say, you know, Aiden and I, we were full of shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is the real deal.
That's one.
Yeah.
All right, good. But Glenn and his team know it. They know what's happening. And so by further admitting where I was, the truth of Nicholas's sort of inability to do anything,
yeah,
it seems to kind of lend Heath some faith that this is the way to go.
Yeah.
And then I get to kill some stuff.
And you get to kill some stuff.
Yeah.
I love the tension of that scene, though, and it's just the greatest tease, I think, that's happened in the show, where it was the writers get you and have fun with you, because normally it's like tension, somebody has something terrible happen to him. Mm-hmm. This was... Build tension. Let's get a good joke in there.
Yeah.
And they actually got us.
Yeah.
Like, we turned and we're like, oh, wow, they got me on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun to play. And we were all playing it so tight, too. Like,
because
you never laugh, you never smile, you never have those little moments like a double take.
Yeah.
and they're like, no. Greg Nicotero's like, no, you know, you should be expecting to hear something. And then you know, you turn and it's not there. And I did it once. He's like, Michael, we're not on a sitcom. It's somewhere in the middle. And I was like, all right.
Trying to be the comic relief. Like,
what? Yeah. Where are they?
We're not playing this like it's 2.5 men. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. What I find interesting, too, is the pairing, because now we see, like, Abraham with Sasha in the car for this. We also see, as I mentioned, you with, you know, Glenn and Heath. But then we also see a lot with Rick with Morgan as well. How do they go about kind of pairing the scenes on the show? Because I think that's really something that's important that we see when we're watching the episode.
We all draw straws.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's no scientific. Yeah. There's
I thought
no
it was just like
art
in the bottle.
No. That's for the after we're done filming.
Exactly. Okay. That's the wrap party.
You want to know some after buzz?
Behind the scenes.
After buzz.
Best DVD extras ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the pairing is really interesting in this episode so far. I think it might continue on the rest of the season.
Yeah,
it'd be cool to see how those relationships develop, because we haven't seen much of, you know, the pairings of the characters at all.
Yeah.
So to see their dynamic would be really cool.
And that's just it. That's what's so exciting. Like, again, I speak as a fan of the show. The different pairings kind of bring out the different facets of these characters' personalities.
Absolutely.
And you get to see different aspects. You know, I love that scene when they're building the fence, the sort of barricade thing. I have a lot of specific technical words for all the things I say.
The curve in the road.
The curve in the road.
The barricading curve in the road. I loved between Carol and Morgan, where Morgan sees into her.
Yeah.
And she's so undone, startled by that, by his ability to perceive the truth of somebody.
Because she's fooling everybody else in Alexandria.
Yeah,
yeah. He saw right through it.
Well, it makes sense because, you know, he even says, I've killed, you killed, we're all killers. Mm-hmm. So he's one of these people that isn't going to take everything at face value because he's had people who've probably come up to him and look like they were going to do right by him and then turned on him.
Yeah.
Like what we've seen. And then, you know, it's like, I know that you're not exactly what you're showing off to everybody else. And he's the first person to call her out for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, how do I act? How do I respond? I don't know.
Yeah, she went off and baked some cookies or something. She's like, I don't know what to do.
And then we were talking about kind of the comedy and a little bit of comic relief in the show because we even have Morgan talking to Michonne and he says, did you take one of my protein bars?
Mm-hmm.
You've always, you always think that
there's one peanut butter left.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce her name. Is it Denai or Danae?
Denai.
In an interview, she was like, it's the freaking apocalypse. Like, if there's one last peanut butter protein bar, she's like, I'm going to take it.
It's true.
Michonne.
Morgan
did the same thing.
He also did a stab Rick at the time. So, you know, stabbed Rick. Sure. We knocked him out and steal a peanut butter.
Yeah. it all makes sense.
It all makes sense.
And then we see Daryl riding his motorcycle to being badass Daryl always, you know, with the herd of the walkers behind him. That's like some weird sound effect that we have going on right now. I think it's a plane flying over.
I thought it was the walking dead herd walking right behind us. It's the herd. The Kool-Aid man their way through here.
Our engineer wrote, it's a herd. on the computer screen. That's hilarious.
Yeah, but we see, you know, obviously Daryl on the bike with the herd behind him and kind of like that they're trying to maneuver the herd away from the camp, as we were mentioning. And then we see Ron asking Rick where his dad was buried, which was that moment where, you know, it was interesting to see Rick how he handled that particular situation, too. And when you guys were watching that, were you thinking that, you know, I actually thought Ron was going to maybe go after Rick a little bit more in that scene than what he did.
When he was standing over the pit and watching the herd that was down there, I wouldn't have put it past him to try to, like, give him a push or something.
That's what I was saying. I totally could see a kid,
you know. If he's distraught enough to leave the safety of Alexandria to go find out where they're burying his dad, I could see that kid easily taking that one step further.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame Ron for wanting to see what they were going to do with his dad's body.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do agree that he's damaged enough to make a decision like that. Mm-hmm. And though it would be terrible for the show, I think it would be pretty true to what he's going through and to who he is at this moment in the show.
I like, though, that they use that as a moment to soften Rick. You know, that he is in this, like, brutal, unrelenting leader. Will do everything he needs to do to make Alexandria safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then he relents. He realizes that we are human beings, and he buries, you know, picks up the shovel and does it to give honor to this kid's dad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who, you know, had a bad night or two.
Yeah. Several,
you know.
Ron is also probably really close to Carl's age, so I don't think Rick would have it in him to not help him or to not teach him how to survive and you know, be able to live out there if he has to. So he would treat him just like he would treat Carl.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't think that he's doing it to be malicious towards Ron or anything.
Yeah, it's not a sins of the father scenario.
No.
Like, he can't be blamed for the stuff his dad did.
No.
And it took Ron's dangerous action to kind of jostle Rick into realizing I can't punish him.
Yeah.
There was a scene they cut out, though, that I really loved on the page where Rick was shoveling and digging the hole for Pete. Yeah. And he was asking...
For Ron.
He was asking Ron. He's like, so what does your mom like? Is there anything, you know, is she, what kind of music does she, I'm just kidding. This thing never happened.
Well, wait a minute.
You definitely had me for a second.
I'm glad they cut that.
Yeah,
scene,
thank God they cut it.
Yeah.
But real quick, speaking of Ron, I don't know, like, I think in one of the flashbacks, we saw Carl and the young girl. What's her name again? The
character's name, Enid.
Enid.
Yeah.
They were sitting on that platform, and was it Ron that was, like, creepily staring, like, watching them from the side?
Back in, like, season...
In the flashbacks.
Oh, he saw the burial where they weren't going to bury Pete in with the grave inside the walls, but I didn't notice him in that other thing.
Because when we saw it today, when we saw Enid and Carl sitting on that platform, yeah. there was a figure in the background, and I thought it was Ron because it was right after Ron had walked out of his house.
I totally didn't see that.
I don't know.
You have to hit us next time.
Yeah, slap us next time that happens.
Ron sighting. This game sucks.
Take a shot, Ron.
Take a shot. And we also have...
No, we can't do drinking games. You and I have determined that would go badly.
We could.
It'd be a really next weird time. After show.
Next time.
I want to come back for that show.
Yeah, you can come back every week. We see also Maggie reveals to Tara that Noah is dead, and that your character actually was, you know, the reason for that. I know.
For shame.
I need a bigger microphone to hide behind.
I know. But it was a cool reaction to see Tara actually. You saw how much Noah was really needed in the camp and wanted in the camp, and so that perspective of seeing her reaction to that was a cool scene in the show. And then we also get introduced to Carter, who is a skeptical of Rick's plan, overall plan for everything. And
there's always got to be one guy.
There's always one guy, you know, in every season. And then we later on, as either you liked Carter or you didn't like Carter, but we see him later on talking about his plan to kind of overtake Rick and maybe even kill Rick. And to his demise, he is bitten by a walker later on in the show.
Note to self, don't be a skeptic in the zombie apocalypse.
Don't be a skeptic. Because that will necessarily might determine your death on the season.
Once you decide to follow Rick, literally follow him.
Follow
him. Don't go first.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we have Morgan, as we were talking about Morgan with Carol. He's kind of expecting or asking her if she's a cop. We have Sasha and Abraham who they're driving in the car trying to get the herd away, and we see kind of Abraham go a little rogue. He jumps out of the car, he goes running in the forest, and he's killing walkers, and you see Sasha's reaction kind of like, what is going on?
Yeah.
You know?
I feel like she shouldn't be judging anybody.
Nah.
The stuff she's done, she shouldn't be judging right now.
Right, sleeping in a bed of walkers.
Yeah.
You know.
But I interestingly don't think that she was judging. I think there was this moment of these two who are the characters who are suffering the most from like PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the people who have to like really deal with the fact that Abraham feels alive in battle.
Yeah.
Yep. And seems to feel ashamed about that in some respect. And then Sasha is trying to find some peace by going further into the fray. I love the pairing of those two.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like explosive and awesome, you know, as we go along in the season to see what they do.
Yeah.
And I love that moment, though, of Abraham just going, I'm in my element.
Yeah. He needed it.
He needed to do that
because he's been pretty, I mean, I guess stagnant in terms of, you know, being in battle or being on a mission. So he needed to get that energy out of him. And it happened at that moment where you wouldn't expect, you know, him to get out and just start busting zombies.
He's a weapon. He needs to be used. Yeah. He's just a weapon, you know, just embracing that.
And I like the connection between those two because I haven't really necessarily seen in the past seasons those particular two characters kind of together. So it was an interesting pairing to me because it was kind of foreshadowing for myself. I was like, is this meaning like down the line, like there may be some more connection with those two because he's so rogue and Sasha is slightly rogue herself, you know, and a lot of the choices that she makes and what she's doing. So, you know, I was like, is this sort of some type of foreshadowing that we may see down
the line? Is Abraham like, let me see what's on the radio.
He's like, it's how I got Rosita.
Well, what I think was interesting about all that was when he starts talking about the night where they end up shooting Pete and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He makes the awkward war story joke, and that's something that people who've only been in really unique situations are able to make those jokes. Like my background, I did stuff with professional wrestling, and I could have conversations about injuries in wrestling with people who've been in wrestling, and they get it. And it's like, you could joke over a beer with it. If I start telling those to quote unquote normal people, you guys would all think I was insane.
Yeah.
And he was starting to try to bond with her in the way that he knows how, because he knows she's becoming a soldier in a way. And that's where he's like, well, if you're going to be down this path, I'm here with you.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was a great dynamic.
And then we have another comedic moment was Eugene with Heath talking about their hair. They bonded on their hair moment.
Loved it. His hair was mentioned twice today.
It was. Yep, it was. But I wanted Eugene to really step up because when he was overhearing Carter talking about taking over, I mean, at this point, I feel like Eugene should be able to kind of, be a little bit more aggressive with the way he can fight back. You know, he overhears Carter and the team talking about maybe possibly taking over Rick, which we slightly talked about. And then all of a sudden, when he realizes that they hear him, he falls back. He knocks over everything before Rick and Daryl and everyone comes into the room. But I at this point, I feel like Eugene should, you know, man up a little
step it up. He's got a lot of time though to change the season, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us anything about Eugene?
He smells amazing. Oh my god,
all the hair, all the product, it's
a lot of maintenance for that mullet.
Like some seafoam mousse. It just takes me back to the beach days of my summer
youth.
I
love it. You gotta take care of yourself, man.
You know, and I will say this though, not everybody can step up all the time. I mean, the only time he actually did anything that was truly heroic and brave was when Tara was bleeding out back mm-hmm. in season 5 and he had to get her somewhere safe. And even that was, you know, it was a Herculean task for that dude. And so I think that when there's an opportunity for him to run towards battle or run away, it's almost in character. I appreciate that they don't try and make him suddenly go, boom, hey, what's happening here, Alexandria? Yeah. This doesn't smell like democracy.
Right.
You know? And to stumble and fall and to falter is his first instinct.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he didn't even really do as good a job as he should have the first time encountering Heath at the fence, because he does not know that those people are absolutely supposed to be in there.
Right.
Because there were the people that were exiled, which have always been mentioned.
Yeah.
And how does he not know those were the people that were exiled?
Yeah.
So he still could have screwed up pretty big time had they been the wrong people.
Yeah.
But also, why wouldn't Heath be a little more understanding of Eugene asking those questions or questioning whether or not he's a resident? I mean, if I were Heath, I'd be like, all right, I can respect it. I mean, it's a scary world out there. He was clearly out there.
Yeah.
He knows what's going on. I don't know if he's encountered other people who have treated him poorly, but, you know, I don't blame Eugene for being, you know, questioning.
Well,
I think he should have been stronger about it.
Corey had just gotten done filming Dr. Dre and Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah.
And so I think he still had some Dre in him, and he just don't fuck with Dre.
So,
you know, I think that it was written differently, but Eugene and, you know, Josh is like, this guy's getting angry. I'm going to let him in.
The other cutscene is when he's leaving, he says to Eugene, bye, Felicia, and just keeps going.
Exactly, yeah. Welcome, you are straight into Alexandria.
I love it.
And then also on the show, we see Morgan and Rick a little bit having some moments together, and Rick even asks Morgan if he wants to hold Judith at one mm-hmm. point. And you see Michonne kind of watching and kind of from a stand back of kind of checking everything out. But I felt like it was also a scene where we were going to see a little bit down the line of maybe Morgan rebelling against Rick's rules a little bit, because mm-hmm. there was a part in the show where they were fighting and Rick had given everyone instructions on what to do, and he had asked Morgan to kind of step back and not step in when the zombies were coming over, and Morgan completely did not listen to what he was saying.
Yeah. I can see them butting heads this season for sure.
And they're both leaders.
They're both leaders. Last season, the problem and the threats were other people, and I feel like it doesn't look like other people are going to be coming in, like groups of people are going to be coming into this season, at least right now. And then right now the threat is the actual zombies, and, you know, I feel like there needs to be tension in the group, and everyone's copacetic right now, but I feel like, if there's going to be conflict between people, it's going to be between Rick Morgan, for sure.
In this episode, he throws his hypocrisies back at Rick.
Yeah.
That scene when they're... The Alexandrians are trying to build the, what was my technical term? The fancy barricade monster?
The wall.
Kirby barricade.
The Kirby barricade thingamajogger?
It changes every time. It does.
Yeah. It's evolving, Ben. It's evolving. He had said, I thought you don't take any chances.
Right.
Yep.
You know? But what are your motives here? Is it because Carter's questions you?
Yeah.
You know? So what are your real motives here, Rick? And I feel that's great. It's like almost like this Jiminy Cricket on Rick's shoulder, who is like badass bow staff wielding and won't let Rick lie, or won't let Rick not follow the truth of what he says as a leader. You know? So that's exciting. And I think that it is also a combustible.
Yeah, absolutely.
It also felt like he was looking too into it later when Carter ends up getting bit and Rick puts him out because he's screaming, he's going to throw everything off. And at that point, if you get bit in the face, this isn't like you could chop off an arm. You're eventually going to go anyway.
It's over. Yeah.
So Rick puts him out, not because he wants to and because of the tension, but it was like it really was tactically the best decision.
Right.
And Morgan gives a questioning look to it. Right. He doesn't buy into it totally. Yeah.
Because the instinct is like, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's okay.
Jumping
you
into
can hit her harder if you
I'm
need
never
to.
Gonna hit her. No. That weird pre-show ritual you guys have is just strange. After buzz
don't
is nothing.
Tell anybody about that.
Pre-buzz, it's crazy. Lots of drinking and softcore sadomasochism.
None of this cheers you guys.
This is why we can't do a drinking game.
Exactly.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Oh,
No.
Okay, we're talking about Morgan giving Rick a questionable look after.
Yeah, this is really strong, whatever this is.
Really strong water we got going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's gone.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm.
It's gone. But the joke was good, guys. It was
worth it. I was waiting for it. There was a lot of build-up for it, too.
No. sorry, guys. We'll do better next time.
Back.
It'll come back.
It'll come
sorry.
Back.
Next time, I'm just putting vodka in the cup.
Exactly. I think that helps.
But I was going to say real quick, you're right. Morgan did sort of question why, or it looked like he was questioning why Rick did that after he said, "I get it." Remember, he was like, "I get what." I forgot if it was between him and Michonne, who was like, "I know what we're doing. I get it. I get why we're out here.
Yeah.
What's going on?" And then he does that. It's like, "Are you sure? You understand? Yeah. Like, why Rick is doing what he's doing?" But, you know.
Oh, yeah, the brutality. That Rick goes to brutality so quickly. Like, you know, Carter could have had family. You know, you patch him up, he goes home, he can say goodbye, then he turns and he goes. Like, there's so many other, like, humanistic options, but Rick is just so quick to.
He doesn't want to waste time.
Yeah.
That would be, I mean, to go back and to do all that and to be that considerate, it's not for the greater good of the whole group.
I agree.
And
he
wasn't shutting up. That was
no,
the big thing.
Yeah.
It's like Rick didn't instantly see him bit and then stab him. He was trying to quiet him.
He's quiet him down.
And there's only so much you could do when everything in this whole episode is based on noise. And that was what, you know, the whole scene that you guys had was you guys had to silence the people in the tractor store. And then, you know, they had to silence Pete. And then the sound, obviously, at the end plays the biggest part in this whole episode.
Yeah. Speaking of that, so we see that the herd of zombies seem to be moving in the direction that Rick wants them all to.
Yeah.
And then we hear this horn that just pops up out of nowhere. We don't know who it is. And all of a sudden, all the zombies start to turn around.
The whole back half of the herd.
The whole back half of the herd go back to Alexandria. And it just kind of goes blank after that, you know. And what was kind of the thought that was going into what do you think with the characters in that particular scene?
Well, we had just done the impossible, right? On a dress rehearsal, on a dry run, we went out there and we were able to kind of execute the plan, and then we all kind of gathered there, and like Rick says, like police at a parade, we're just going to pick off the stragglers, do it quiet, do it quick, and then this mysterious noise.
Yeah.
And it's all for shit.
What is it, Michael? What is the noise?
Who is it? Tell us. Who is it?
I just met my cussing quota.
Yep. You hit all three of us.
We'll give you five more. Five more.
If you give us details, we give you swear words.
We'll give you five more.
We're negotiating.
The table. Come on, man.
We're negotiating
here. No. That noise is danger.
Yeah.
That noise is... Episode 2.
Yeah, it's somebody subverting what they were going to, whether it's somebody in the group or it's an outside force. And that's why it's a great moment because, you know, there were the people who did still have their doubts inside. And that's part of why Carol stays behind on all this is to see what people are thinking of Rick. And if one person could do something that totally subverts everything Rick just did and people got killed because of the decision that Rick made, then it could be an internal thing.
Yeah. I feel like it's a setup. I feel like it's definitely a setup for Rick. That's, you know, kind of where I feel like it's going to go down the line.
Yeah, like Carter's not the only one that was trying to push back.
Yeah.
Someone's actually doing it.
Yeah. It wasn't Nick. Nick was out in the
field.
Nick is clear. He's safe.
Like, people finally like me. Don't ruin this guy.
Exactly, man.
Yeah, and then we see after that, we see Jesse talking to Rick as well about Ron and telling Rick that he can't touch Ron at all
or talk to him in that
manner,
right?
And Rick wants Ron to be able to kind of protect himself, and you see that Rick is kind of coming from a good place, but Jesse's not hearing it at all.
But I also get where Jesse's coming from. I mean, a teenage boy who's going through this, whose dad was just killed, who just got buried, the last thing he's going to do is listen to someone who he doesn't see in a good light, at least not right now. So I mean, I'm sure he's going to have a hard time listening to his mom as well, but the one person it should come from is her. So yeah. I totally agree with what she's
saying. Or at least somebody who's just not attached to Rick.
Right.
That's just...
Yeah.
It's, you know... If somebody ever got killed by a cop for whatever reason, that person is going to never listen to the cops again.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
just a factor of it.
Yeah.
That's and true. But then we have Rick saying, we have to come for them before they come for us. So I feel like Rick is also telling, you know, embedded in his head to always protect and to always be able to protect yourself.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I felt like he wasn't in the wrong in this situation. I get where Jesse's coming from with it being her son and, you know, all the things that just happened with his father. But on the flip side of this, you're in a zombie apocalypse. You have to be prepared at any moment to yeah. protect yourself. And I feel like that's where Rick is coming from in that place.
And totally. She does, though. She full-on goes Sarah Connor, right? She says, the second yeah. I heard that we could have guns,
I got one
from Rosita. Yeah. Exactly. Rosita. With training and all that
stuff. She's being resourceful. I mean, mm-hmm. Rick isn't always at Alexandria. The people who are always around are the women, you know? So she's going to get help from them.
Yeah.
She's going to do what she got to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So... Good for her.
Good for her. She's doing it. We'll see what happens between those two.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives a overview of what this episode kind of entailed at the beginning,
right?
From the end. But with your character, you know, as I was kind of mentioning at the beginning, you have transformed a little bit of what we saw in this particular episode. And how far in advance, when you get the script, do you know what's going to be kind of taking place with your character before, you know, you shoot the scene?
When I first got hired, I had no idea. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't know if I was on for... I mean, there was a guarantee, but people have been, like, you know, guaranteed 3 episodes and killed in 2.
Yeah.
And so, they just get paid for the third?
I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure the contracts of that, but I think that they'd have to. Exactly, yeah. So I really had no sense of it, and it was actually sort of terrifying as far as a job goes. You know, like, if I do really well, can I stay longer?
Yeah.
You know? And
can I Daryl myself?
Exactly, totally. I can ride a tricycle really well. not quite as sexy, but you'll need some comic relief. So then with season 5, I just knew script to script. I'd get the script, and I'd read through to the end. Everyone reads through to the end. If, like, do I survive? You know,
right. It's always a surprise, right? I mean,
yeah, because I heard there's like a table. Phone. Is there a mysterious phone call that they were saying that happens yeah. to you know,
yeah,
the
yeah,
character?
But okay. I think you have to kind of be there for a while before the phone call comes.
Okay.
Like, you have to earn the phone call.
Like, you have to be at least like 7-8 episodes before.
A recurring, I think that, like, whoever the producer is on set that day will go, like, thanks a lot, you've been really good. You know, this is where you die. And I'm like, what?
Well, yeah. Like, thanks.
Now, by the way, put down that Twinkie. You're no longer part of the show.
You lose all that amazing craft service.
Exactly. But there was lobster today.
Yum.
Yeah, totally. No, and in season 5-6, sorry, rather, I got a call from Scott Gimple, and when the phone rings, you're just, is this the call?
You just freak out. You completely freak out.
Do I just go to voicemail? I don't want to hear that on voicemail.
I don't want to talk to you.
So you pick up the phone and go, hey, Scott. And he
you're
just
like
had mentioned,
bullets.
No, it was a good phone call. Just kind of talked about what the story was going to be, that there was going to be a path of redemption, but they wanted me to be able to really thread the, you know, the camel through the needle and make sure that it wasn't like, oh great, we're all chummy now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is just slow enough to earn, you know, and there's gonna be stumbles and excitement and twists and turns to our relationship.
Yeah.
But, so I did have somewhat of a sense of where it was going in season 6. But the first mm-hmm. time it was really script to script. I had no idea.
Right.
Yeah.
And that final, when I was reading the season 5 finale, I just thought, oh, I'm gone.
I'm gone.
Yeah. I'm gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gone. I had to reread the page. Like, he doesn't?
You're like, wait, I'm still here.
Why doesn't he? He should.
And Robert Kirkman says that this is the most intense season of all the seasons.
Yeah.
And kind of what can you tell us about that in his meaning behind that?
Well, I think the scale. I think that the scale and the intensity. We have our heroes that we love, like I say, as a fan, I speak of as a fan, who have gone through 5 seasons of hell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a chance for a little bit of stability. Like, this is a chance to start rebuilding, to plant some roots. And we see episode 1, top of episode 1, and then throughout, that not only are there dangers that we had never expected, but those dangers are now coming directly towards home. And so I think that level of intensity, and as the cauldron gets hotter, all of these interpersonal relationships, you know, what's going to happen between Glenn and Nicholas? Is Morgan, what are all these wild cards are at stake?
So many wild cards.
We didn't even know Carter before, and then he comes in out of nowhere. Yeah. As another denizen of Alexandria, and he, you know, almost tries to topple the Rictatorship.
Yeah.
So there are constant threats from within and without, and I think that we've never had something that the heroes want to fight so hard for. They're always, like, the prison, they're like, we'll leave the prison.
Yeah.
You know, if we have to, we'll leave the prison. But here they're not. They want to stay here.
Yeah. Well, there was one thing, because they always referred to the prison as the prison, and any of the spots where they've been, this was one time, and it was almost a throwaway line. Rick said, "Where's that coming from?" And he goes, "Home."
Yeah. I noticed that.
That
too.
Was a very, like, that was a calculated choice of words.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I noticed that too. They're going to the extremes this season, I feel.
It really is.
I mean, everything is going to be hardcore, you know, metal to the floor. Everything is going to be cliffhangers galore. I feel like I'm rhyming, but I don't mean to. But that's what it's going to be like. And they started off really well.
And I can promise you that is exactly what it is. Yeah. You know, when we saw our dudes before Alexandria last year, they didn't even have water. Remember?
Yeah.
They're trying to find water in some barn, and it's just they are not going to let home fall.
Yeah.
And they're gonna. It's pretty epic. It just continues to be exciting.
And they kind of have it for free. I saw the sign for Alexandria, and it said brand new home starting at $800K.
Right.
I was like, damn, that's expensive.
That's expensive.
Those get you homes a one are nice. Bedroom apartment here
so
in Los
expensive.
Angeles.
I know. Yeah, like a 2-bedroom condo if you're gonna buy here.
No. Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, they got it for free.
Kind of.
Let me show
they
you my mortgage broker. With a Python gun.
And with your character, you know, you haven't necessarily been the most liked character, and
what do you mean?
You know, just because of a certain situation of Noah happened, you know, what happened with last season.
I told you not to talk about this, Daryl.
I know. We're not supposed to talk about this. Is it overwhelming when you are, you know, meeting fans, and is it hard for them to place the reality versus the character? You know, as we mentioned, like Comic-Con just happened, you guys did the whole premiere also in New York, and I was reading that Gabriel came on stage, the character who the actor who plays Gabriel, and people were booing him, and it's like, okay,
you were the front.
I was in the front runner.
You were the one that was 86, weren't you?
Yeah, I was the one.
Look familiar.
Yes, I was in the front row booing.
You look gorgeous as a little Pikachu.
I try. You know? But is it overwhelming to have those fan reactions?
Yes. And I was not hired to play a lovable character.
Yeah.
So I just hear love when they're like, man, I hate you. I go, oh, I did my job. Job security.
Yeah. That's awesome.
You know, so I think that a lot that Seth has gotten and that I've gotten, it can be, you know, hurtful if you let it get to you. But Yvette Nicole Brown was the MC
night. Yeah.
And she did a great thing. She's like, no. We applaud this. you hate the character and you love the actor. You hate the character, you love the actor. And it was great. And the audience turned immediately and just started like just screaming that they loved him.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what it is. I mean, when I meet people, they're like, oh my God, I hate you.
I was like, I did my job.
I hate me too. I know. And then immediately they just want to talk about how much they love, after that little initial catharsis, they just want to talk about how much they love the show.
Right. And well, the thing with it is, they hate the character because you're doing a good job at the, you know, especially at that time, of being a despicable character.
Right.
They don't hate the character because you're a bad actor.
Right.
That's the time where it's understandable.
Yeah. And that's exactly. I hate you. Oh, well, the character. No. You.
Your
choices are weird. Yeah. Why did you do that?
What is this weird tick you have with like touching your face? All that you're a terrible actor. I hate you.
No.
No, I don't get that.
That's
luckily,
not true.
Thankfully, I don't get that.
And then if you could write the script for yourself and you could write, you know, down the line on what your character is
going
to go, what would you write about Nicholas? How would you develop Nicholas on the show?
Oh, that's interesting. That's a good question. I would like to see him get back to after, you know, hoping that there is an end to this herd. I would love to see him become, again, like a runner like he was before, but somebody, you know, to be applauded, a really good soldier, you know, for Alexandria. And I also think that there are some relationships that are unexplored.
I mean, Jesse needs a little, you know, attention.
I'm not going to go.
You should be crossing Rick on that.
Are
no,
you
exactly.
At
Rick's
something?
Like, Glenn, you need to kill him now. I think Melissa McBride is awesome. So I think that there should be some Nicholas and Carol Oh. Action. If I were writing my own script,
you have to fight Daryl. You know, we had that big debate on the show.
Whatever.
Like,
I got him.
You gotta get a motorcycle, man.
Yeah, totally take him.
You and your tricycle, definitely gonna beat him out.
Maybe we could get you one of those glider boards that kids are riding down, like Santa
Monica. Is that what those things are called?
Glider boards.
Oh my god!
Somebody called them a hoverboard, and I got violently angry. I'm like, that does not hover.
I kind of just want to call them a douchemobile. I saw somebody like doing it at the airport, and I was like, oh my god, dude. I've never wanted to trip a stranger so much.
That's so funny.
I told a kid in the office if he wrote it down the hallway one more time, I was going to just full on football tackle him off of it.
You just want to. They're like just moving targets. It's like a dog when he sees a squirrel. You're like, I'll target. You know, forget the laws of man. Take that thing out.
Take that out.
Uh-huh. I like them, you guys.
I can't wait. I get mine in 2 weeks.
I'm so jealous.
Now it's revealed.
They're a lot harder to use than they look.
That's true.
If you could play a different character on the show, who would it be?
Different character. Michonne, dude.
Yeah.
She'd be the closest thing to like a Jedi out there.
Absolutely.
Like,
she's so badass. Yeah.
She's so badass.
I love her character.
I know. And the way she did like these stares and these looks.
Yeah.
So icy.
Denai gives those things too. She goes, that was a dumb joke. She stares at me. She goes, she's stupid. Stupid. This boy's stupid.
It was
funny.
It's
so hard for me to imagine Denai. You know, because I'm the singer as Michonne. No, I know.
As anything but Michonne.
Right, and she's this eloquent, very elegant woman who's like an accomplished playwright. She's a play on Broadway right now. Yeah. Oh, sorry, not on Broadway, but down to public, like just off Broadway. She's so... It's just, you know, it's funny. Like, Denai is so, like, talkative and vivacious. And then, you know, Michonne's is this weapon waiting.
Does she get into Michonne character very quickly?
I think because of the wig is tight, so yes.
It just angers her.
There's lots of wigs on that. Yeah.
Let me get this over with.
Exactly. Yeah.
It threw me off when I saw her, even though it was obviously not her gun, she was just picking up Carter's because, you know, you couldn't leave a gun behind. But her just holding a gun in her hand, I'm like, that's not okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Like that no, visually I'm not okay with this right now.
That's the rule, yeah.
And but then, she didn't shoot it, so it was okay.
Didn't shoot it. And then who have you grown very close with on the set? I mean, I've heard it's very warm on the set.
Yeah.
You know, outside of what we see with The Walking Dead. But it's a pretty cool set to be on. Who have you kind of attached to on the show?
It's fun because when I first got on, there was a bunch of us Alexandrians. Yeah. And they had us all at the same hotel deep in the woods, sort of like The Shining. Mm-hmm. But it was lovely. The great accommodations. But so... Daniel Bonjour, who played Aiden, and then Ross Marquand, who was Aaron, and Jordan, who played Eric, we all would hang out a lot. So that was fun, because we're like the new kids. We're like, oh, what do we think the rules of this world are? And then on set, I mean, all my stuff was with Steven, which is so awesome. Yeah. He's a very kind of professional and caring guy. And he's not, you know, we weren't joking around a whole lot. There was funny times, but he was just so dedicated. It was really exciting to kind of see that level of dedication season 5.
Yeah.
You know, acting is a strange game, and people get on season, you know, 2 and 3 of a show, they're like, oh, this job again. And there is none of that there, you know, and I saw that as an example from, you know, Andrew Lincoln comes to set every day.
Yeah.
And he just gets beaten up on the show, and he comes and he brings 110%, and Steven also 110%. So, you know, I had to up my game for my normal, like, 65% okay?
You're like, is that cool?
Mm-hmm. I'm just standing in a room going...
You're like, I believe in this.
Yeah.
No, it's cool to hear that everyone comes in believing the show as much as they did from day one.
Yeah. And it's true. Like, the thing, like, with the day that Tyler, Noah, was killed, you know, everyone came to set. Everyone who could, you know, came to set. They weren't working that day, but they all wanted to see it and experience it. So there's this honoring of your time there. And, oh, this is your time to go. And we have dinners when people go. And,
that's cool.
You know, it's really, like... It's one of the best gigs I could ever imagine,
because
the people are so awesome, and the crew, I'll sing their praises for days and days on end. It'll be after buzzing for 12 years.
Hell yeah.
You're first.
Yeah, so it's really great. It is very welcoming. All the rumors you hear are true.
Do you guys like hang out at the houses in Alexandria? Do you have like dinner parties on set? Like, is it a place that you guys can just kind of stick around and get to know each other?
No, but a lot of the regulars live up in the same area, you know. So there'll be like, you know, games nights and things of that sort. And it's nice. It's lovely because you can't really stroll around. Like, once you're on this show, especially in Atlanta, people see you and notice you. You know.
I want to be invited to your games night.
Totally.
What games? Okay.
Oh my god! I want to go.
They played Mafia. you know,
Cards Against Humanity,
a little bit of
Super
that.
Fight.
Mm-hmm. No, I think just Cards Against Humanity, and some Mafia, like some of those games, like Charade.
You can't go wrong with Cards Against Humanity.
Super Fight might be a bit much since there is a Walking Dead expansion to it. It might hit a little too close to home.
Yeah,
so true.
We were all at a convention and started playing the little the flip up game, Heads Up. You know, after a few glasses of wine, you know, it was
so
great.
Fun.
Yeah, they're lovely people. It's really cool, and because those who've been on forever. Andrew and Steven and Denai and Norman, and because the producers are really protective of it, it remains this kind of cool club to be part of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I gotta say, like, no matter what other gigs I may have down the line, this is something that's really special, and
awesome.
It's because of the people, you know.
And then I read that you obviously have a lot of scenes. That was a great
ending. Tear moment.
Yeah, that was a tear moment sound effect.
He's close up.
Yeah. I think I see it falling in your eye right now.
Digitally.
And you and Steven obviously have a lot of scenes, and I heard that there was a little bit of a slight mishap on set where he punched you or slapped you in the sense of, like, when you guys were
fighting
scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, how physical do you guys get on set when you were having your scenes?
Well, that was one of our first fight scenes. Like, after I run away from the revolving door and he pulls me out of the van, it was just a rehearsal, and he throws me to the ground and tags me once, and he totally made contact and my head hits there. And it swelled up immediately. It's like this big, like, you know, big egg there. And he's like, oh my God, I rookered him. I feel so bad. I rookered him.
It's a great term.
Michael Rooker is a really aggressive actor in a fun way. He really wants to make sure it's real. So, but after that, I felt like, oh, I'm part of the gang now. I've been hit. And so for every other fight scene that we had, Steven and I just kind of said, we'll just go as much as we can, as hard as we can, in order to, you know, not hurt each other. But we wanted to really make sure that the fights looked good, that we had to sell this animosity and this sense of, like, we're fighting for our lives. So much so that the stunt guys were cool with, like, us just doing all of it.
Yeah.
So it was really exciting. And for actors, we're wimps, man. We are wimps. I don't care what actor you are. You're a wimp. So when the stunt guy goes, no, that looks good. You guys can do it. We're like, oh, I feel particularly manly today. And I do it in that voice. And so they're like, maybe not. Maybe stop doing that voice right now. Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious.
And what do you think of Fear of the Walking Dead? I mean, there's, you know, obviously it did really well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying next season is going to be on a boat, which we kind of briefly talked about. We're on a boat. But what were your thoughts of this season?
I love slow burn television. I think it's exciting. I think it builds this tension. I think that they had a huge, like, they had a difficult task in that everybody, millions of people have been following The Walking Dead. We know the rules. We know the world. It's like the worst case of dramatic irony ever, where the audience is that much smarter than every character in the TV show. And yet still, it was compelling. It was cool. And then I just knew that those guys, Robert Kirkman and Nicotero and Galen Hurd, they would be smart about where it went. And I felt that the sixth episode, going on a boat, was awesome. And it completely, like, everyone's going to be thinking until the next season of that, what else can happen? Now we're on a boat. All the imaginations are roaring. And I think that that's the job of those first six episodes, you know?
And then what can you tell us, maybe, I know you can't reveal a lot, but what can you kind of tell us about the remainder of the season, what we're going to see with The Walking Dead?
Just the dangers that you see, both interpersonal, the dangers we've seen in the past, and the threat of this herd, this concentrated biomass of death, is something that is going to be a real threat to everything that the heroes we love hold dear.
That was one of the best sound clips ever. Concentrated biomass.
I know, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I like that. That's a great sound clip. We may use that at After Buzz.
Sure, totally. Yeah,
I'm gonna write a B grade horror movie with that.
Why B grade?
I'm not that good.
Okay.
And then I know you have other projects coming out. You got Needlestick, Jukebox. What can you tell us about those projects that you're working on as well?
Needlestick, it's a fun little psychological horror thriller. Like, it takes place in a hospital. It was a lot of fun. It was shot in Detroit with a lot of the crew from Detroit, some of the tax incentives there. And so it was a really fun experience. I went there and ran for mayor of Greektown. I didn't win, but, you know, it was a fun time. Lance Henriksen is also in it, who's just awesome. We know him as, like, Bishop from Alien. A bunch of other movies, this grizzled, kind of deep-voiced. He plays a questionable doctor trying to do things to human beings that maybe you shouldn't do.
Hmm.
And so...
Very Human Centipede.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what I just thought of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's exciting. I haven't seen the final cut of it, but I know I had a blast filming it, and I'm really excited that film can be something to help generate some economic development in areas.
Oh,
so
cool.
It was really fun to do. Yeah.
I actually want to know what your audition.
No.
Damn. Shut down.
No more questions. No.
I answer no more.
What was your audition for Nicholas like?
Oh.
Did you have to do anything?
Because you didn't know that you were. It was the character was Nicholas.
No. They use fake sides, audition like scripts, and they use fake names. I just knew he was a guy who was like a weekend warrior who heard some stuff going down, and then his buddy runs, and it's a moment of does he decide to run towards the fray or away from it. So they wanted to see, I think, within the audition material, can somebody hold that dilemma of do I go towards the fight or away from the fight? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a sense of bravado up front in the scene, and then, you know, some cowering and some indecision under pressure. That was basically the beats of it that I remember.
Hmm.
So, and that ended up becoming Nicholas, mm-hmm. you know? So that was my audition. And I just put it to tape and sent it off. And then I got a call on my anniversary last year.
Oh, nice.
That's really cool.
I said, honey, this is the best gift ever.
Yeah.
I got you a card and some flowers. She's like, I got you The Walking Dead. So, it was really exciting.
And do you think that you, Michael, could survive a zombie apocalypse if it happened here in L.A.?
Or wherever.
Exactly. Wherever.
Only locationally specific.
Yeah.
Above a certain altitude, no, I'm dead. My plan is stop off at Walmart, get some shotguns, head to Costco, and make alliances with anybody who wants to be in the Costco. Yeah. You know, I'd be like, do you have a Costco club? Sorry. Club card. Sorry, you can't go.
Sorry, you can't be part of my team. You don't have a card. Sorry.
If you weren't a fan before, I don't care what's happening in the apocalypse, man. It's loyalty, dude. But yeah, I'd hunker down in a Costco and defend it to the last living breath.
And what would be your weapon of choice?
Gardening shears.
Mm.
No, just kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, that could work.
I don't know.
They start to get clunked.
Let me get the neck.
But you can stab. You can do a lot of stabbing.
Quit moving. Yeah. All this shambling is hard. People don't care. Shotguns. I like shotguns. Yeah. Spray a lot of people. Hit a lot of people.
No bow and arrows, huh?
No.
Nobody would get hit.
Guys, exactly.
Did you have to go through some sort of training to know exactly how to hold the gun right, or
I had
any
past
sort of weapon
gigs
that you're going to be using?
I had in past gigs, a stunt guy come to me and go, listen, that's not how you hold a gun. I was like, oh, really?
I'm not supposed to do this.
What do I do?
Yeah. Dough goes this way. Oh, that makes it much more effective. And so coming into this one, I was okay. But even still, some of the new guns, just the mechanics of it. And the prop guys are so good about, this is how you do it. And you're like, oh.
You're like, what?
Yeah, I want to do it that way, too. I stumble and fumble.
Yeah.
Part of my charm.
It's mm-hmm. cool.
Well, we have to wrap up soon, but we want to move on to some news and gossip that
Chris
has for us.
Do you have a few things to say?
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right. So, I know that this isn't exactly new news. It was reported back in July. I read that Alana Masterson, who plays Tara, is expecting her first child, and she was pregnant at the premiere on Friday.
She was.
Super pregnant.
Yeah, uber pregnant.
Uber.
Exactly.
And also, I learned that the actress who plays Sasha was about 8 months pregnant in the scene where she was sleeping on top of all the walkers.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Also, Scott Wilson became the first inductee into the Walking Dead Hall of Fame, which just got established. He played Herschel.
Yeah.
So he's the first character to be, or the first actor to be in the Walking Dead
he
Hall
of
Fame.
He was also pregnant.
Was he?
He carries it very well.
Yeah, he does.
Only 3 months
pregnant.
Uh-huh.
Everyone on the show is just getting pregnant.
It's a friendly show, guys. It's a friendly cast.
And we saw Norman Reedus enter The Walking Dead season today on a motorcycle, and he did the same thing at the premiere,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was super badass. There's a video of that, I think.
Yeah, blazing
really
down
cool.
center court in Madison Square Garden.
I mean, if you're gonna enter, you gotta enter right.
Yeah,
that's right.
So
the garden deserves entrances.
Yes. And this is just something that I thought was interesting. In the first 6 episodes of this season, we're going to see more zombies than we did in the entirety of last season.
Wow.
Yeah. So last season there was 967 zombies.
Okay.
In the first 6 months, or first 6 episodes, we're going to see over 2,500 zombies.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The scale
which
is
we
awesome.
Already saw probably more zombies than we did last
I think
season.
There was probably
tonight.
1,000 in that
yeah.
episode.
I think it's 800 and something, or 800 or 900.
Tonight?
Yeah, in the pilot, which is it's an ungodly amount of zombies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the digitally enhanced, where there's just thousands and thousands mm-hmm. and thousands of them. Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. Again, a testament to the fact that this season the threat's going to be back on the zombies. It's going to be the zombies again and not other people. So,
wow.
It's pretty crazy.
Cool.
Yeah. That's kind of all I got. Is there anything that you want to add to that? News and gossip about The Walking Dead?
I can't, man. They'll kill me. I can't.
Well, we do know that AMC is launching the official Walking Dead game for iOS.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's coming out. They're teaming up with Next Game, so, and it's an official mobile game. So that's, and they said that Daryl's going to be one of the key characters in the game, and also Michonne. So go get that and check it out.
Do it.
We're going to move on to some predictions.
All right.
Woohoo.
And now,
AMC TV.
Oh, yeah.
Predictions.
Seizure warning.
Seizure warning. Sorry. If you're watching this, it's a seizure warning.
I hear the rave music in my head. This rave is awesome.
John, we'll start with you with predictions.
I mean, it's kind of the obvious one. So, you know, the wolves are the reason for the horn going off.
Right.
And that probably isn't going to get revealed until 3 to 4 episodes down. I think they're going to have to deal with the immediate threat. And once they protect whatever amount of the town that they can protect, that's when all of a sudden the true threat gets revealed.
Yeah.
That's how I see that pacing out this season.
Joyce?
Cool. I'm going to go with what we said earlier and say that Morgan and Rick are going to butt heads a lot this season.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe parts of the group that's together now is going to go off with, you know, Morgan and his lead, and it's going to be another separation issue, and you know, that'll cause even more trouble this season for them.
I got to ask you, what is your prediction? What
well,
you tell
I'm worried
us?
About that prediction. Nicholas has separation anxiety, man.
What, can I go with Papa Glenn?
Is it because I'm on point?
Ooh. I say nothing.
People are just going to keep rewinding that shot.
My prediction is that Nicholas wins the apocalypse, guys.
Mm. I like
very
it.
Very optimistic.
I like that. We'll have his day in the sun.
Woo! Is that a cheer or a boo? I can't tell.
I think that was a cheer.
I think it was a cheer.
Yeah, it's like a yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that I think I agree with you, Joyce, that Morgan is going to cause some type of chaotic kind of threat, I feel like, to Rick down the line. And I think Ron is going to somehow come after Rick. I think there's going to be more with him that happens.
I think Ron is going to be troublesome, too. Mm. But it would suck to have Morgan and Rick sort of split up after, you know, Rick handing Judith to him was sort of his way of saying, like, I trust you again.
Yeah, like, but I feel like that was some weird foreshadowing.
Yeah, like, so. Like, haha, just kidding, audience.
Right.
They're not okay.
Right.
I don't know. I do think, jumping on the Ron thing, I do think there is going to be a scene that was really similar to the comics where when the town does get hit, there's going to be a moment where Rick has to do something, and it's going to come between saving his own son and saving Ron.
Yeah.
And I mean, that in the books, that was a really crazy scene. Like, really, like, I had to put the book down for a minute. I was like, wow, did that really just happen?
Yeah.
And I don't know, there's something about this kid that I think that's going to happen to him too.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see very soon. Michael, where can fans find you on social media?
At Traynorland, at Traynor Land, across all various social media platforms.
Hey.
Joyce.
Hey. You guys can find me at Jay Azuri on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. All social media platforms.
All social media platforms.
All social media, The John Carl, and also the YouTube channel, Whiskey and Waffles.
You can find me at Daryl Kristen on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and also on our brother network, Black Hollywood Live. I was like, brother network, Black Hollywood Live. So thank you for tuning in to season 6 opening episode for The Walking Dead. Michael, you were a blast. You got to come back.
Okay.
Yeah,
you know, come back every week.
Okay, every week.
And do predictions with us.
All right.
Every
less
week
alcohol
keeps...
next time,
and less
guys.
Alcohol, a.k.a. water. But everybody have a
AKA
great week.
Stoli.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye,
guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.